Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach Stanfield, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Coach. I appreciate it.
Coach, let's get back to the beginning for you and think about some of the things and how you've developed your philosophy as a coach. But let's start with what made you want to be a football coach.
Well, I actually didn't plan on being a coach. My first job was in Young Life, youth ministry, reaching out to kids in the high school level. And then that led me into teaching. And it was only because I had played college football that my first teaching job basically said, you need to coach for us. I didn't necessarily plan on doing that. But then as I got the opportunity to coach, I realized that there's a lot different relationship that you can build on the field with your players, and it's a little bit different than in the classroom as a teacher. And that just kind of took off, and that relational emphasis of the ministry that I was in with Young Life, there's a lot of commonalities between that and the coach-player relationship.
So in that first job you had, which was kind of, you had to do it almost to get your teaching job, what did you learn as a coach?
Well, it was eight-man football, and I'd never seen eight-man before, and there weren't a lot of coaches in the building because it was a small school, so I learned how to coach all kinds of positions that I had never played before, and it was probably the best thing for me because you really don't understand necessarily the intricacies of a position until you have to coach it, and that first job basically had to coach everything at one point or another in the 4 years that I was there.
And over the course of your career, as this continued to develop, and obviously your love for coaching continued to develop, what were some key things you learned that moved you along into really becoming a full-time college football coach?
Well, I think one of the things that's exciting about coaching is it's an opportunity to never stop learning. I always look at kind of right now we're in that December, January, February, we're in that stage of looking at things that people do that are different than us, kind of percolating what we can do to improve what we do. And then, you know, we start to kind of meet as a staff in February, March to get ready for spring football. And so I always love that opportunity to keep learning about the game and about the evolution of the way the game is going. But the bigger thing is just that importance of relationships. The coaching, you have such an opportunity to make a difference in your players' lives beyond just teaching them the X's and O's of football. And I think that's ongoing, and I really appreciate that I get to do that for a living.
What's been the philosophy that really drives you as a coach?
Well, you know, Young Life has a mantra that you have to earn the right to be heard. And I think the same kind of thing is true in coaching. My philosophy has been to be a player's coach, to be someone that my players can talk to, hopefully that give them, understanding when they need it, a rock to rely on when they're going through hard times. And just to kind of be there. I had a dad tell me early in my career that their son hears me a lot better than they do. And unfortunately, that's probably true at that point in that kid's life. And just to realize that the things that we have, the role that we have in a player's life is going to have huge outcomes into who they become as a person and into their adulthood. So just taking that very seriously.
I know at the high school level, you had the opportunity to build some teams and you had a state championship under your belt. You don't get to that level, you don't get to the pinnacle without doing some things to build a team. And a lot of people refer to that as culture right now. So what things do you do to build culture, either in your team or now, you know, you have your offensive unit? What things do you do as a coach to build culture?
Well, one of the things that we've had a lot of fun doing is building competitions into everything we do. You know, like, for example, now in training camp, we get the guys into different small groups, and we have everything from trivia night to giant Jenga to ping pong peanut butter, and there's some fun to all that, but there's also this level of competition that's ongoing. Right now in the off season, we have our off season competition groups, and this whole idea is kind of a Pete Carroll, a Chris Peterson thing that I picked up, just those guys both being Northwest coaches, to teaching your kids how to compete beyond just the playing field. That's something that's been really helpful to our culture, and then having fun with that, having the players see you get into it and get excited about those little opportunities, even if it's just like 5 minutes at the end of a workout. Those are opportunities for our guys just to grow and to get closer together, and those are things that help our culture for sure. Definitely also just the position coach and the way we are able to break down. We have a pretty large staff at Whitworth here that we're fortunate to have, and so each of our guys take on the ownership of having that tight-knit group at their position where they can open up and talk about things on a more intimate level, and that definitely feeds into your overall culture as well.
Okay, I have to ask, giant Jenga and what was it, ping pong peanut butter?
Yeah, giant Jenga, just like huge 2x4s cut up, you know, the game Jenga, and it's just huge big old pieces that you pull out, and you got music blaring, and you know, one team's going to ultimately cause the thing to fall, and so they're obviously the losers, all the other groups are winners. And then ping pong peanut butter is two tables set up, you're bouncing ping pongs onto another table that's about 8 feet away with three pieces of bread that have peanut butter on them. And the first one closest to is 1 point, the middle is two, and the last one's three. And you're just bouncing those things like crazy until one sticks and you got a minute to score points. And it's pretty funny because ping pong, they bounce all over the place. But then when they hit that peanut butter, it's just like this thud and they stick and the whole room goes nuts. So just different things like that. A lot of minute to win it competition type things that our coaches kind of come up with on their own, and then we bring them together, and if it works and they're fun, we bring them back, and if they're duds, we just cross them off.
That's neat stuff. I mean, obviously keeping it fun, but bringing in the competition obviously are good things you build culture with. Coach, as you move, you know, those intangibles, those things you build off the field onto the field and that performance, what has been the philosophy of your offense? What are you trying to accomplish?
You know, I think the biggest thing is we're trying to teach our kids to play fast. We're a tempo offense. So speaking more to the offense now, the philosophy there, we want to play fast. We want to keep things extremely simple. So from a verbiage standpoint, looking at our offense, you know, 8 to 10 years ago, kind of where we started and the amount of words we were using compared to the amount of words we're using now just has been really cut down. We're able to basically get down to one word plays and everybody knows what they're doing. And then being a spread team, we've been always wanting to instill this kind of grit and toughness to how we're approaching things and not wanting to be just a finesse spread team, but a team that can be good both in the run and pass. And so those are really kind of the key tenets behind the philosophy of what we're doing offensively.
What are some of the best things you're doing as coaches that you're teaching your players that understanding out on the field or in the classroom?
Well, with like the streamlining terminology, we've allowed our kids to get involved in that. So spring ball is a lot of the tinkering time for us. And last year the kids had the idea of NBA tags. And so we got all of our kind of base pass concepts down into NBA tags. They own that process. And then as we taught those in the classroom, they had kind of interesting ways they would associate what we're trying to do as far as the space we're trying to attack with the player that got named or the team that got named that tag. And so that's kind of a fun way to get your kids involved with the playbook, not just always having it be trickle down from the coaches and what you thought would work and maybe a staff meeting and then down to the players, but getting them involved in the process. And then we've just done, I think, a good job. We have a count system that we put in with our run game 2 seasons ago, and that's evolved over the last 2 years to really let our guys kind of own a better understanding of, especially with the O-line, their run responsibilities and their pass pro responsibilities. And again, it's allowed them to play fast and make a lot less calls on the field.
Coach, as you look back on this past season, you guys obviously have moved the ball very well. You were number 5 in the country in Division 3 in total offense at 526.2 yards per game. You were number 2 in passing offense at 394.4 and number 4 in scoring at 45.9 points per game. So you've had a very explosive offense. As you look back on that, what's the play or maybe plays that you'd say this is what we really leaned on to accomplish and to be able to do something like that?
We hang our hat on a play called Army. It's our inside zone scheme, and it's nothing all that different from what a lot of other people are doing. But we have a pretty simple way of tagging our screen and quick games to it. So it has been an RPO, and we've really been running this RPO for about 7-8 years now at the high school and now the college level. Like I said, we have a count system that identifies the five most dangerous hats. Our center basically starts it out, and then our quarterback's just responsible for pre-snap and post-snap number three to the field and boundary. And so we might have a quick game tag to the boundary and a screen tag to the field, and he knows that pre-snap his read is on leverage, and if he's got good leverage, he's going to go ahead and throw that quick game, and then the screen tag is based off that backside of the inside zone. We're not really reading the quarterback to run all that much. It's a tailback run, quarterback throw read. But when we push our count, we can get that backside C-gap player in the read, and then that becomes more of a QB run option. And we build that into our game plan kind of week to week, how much we want to put him into the run game. But it's a really easy, with our Army-based play, it's a really easy way for us to package quick game concepts, perimeter screen concepts to our base identity, which is, like I said, inside zone. We're going to run that 20, 25 times a game. It's called more than any other play in our playbook. And, before we get to outside zone and counter, which are run complements, we're going to make you stop Army.
And how did you come up with the name Army?
You know, again, it's like Army's our inside zone, Navy's our outside zone, and it just is something that became, it used to just be ABC, 1, 2, 3, and if you could count to three, you could play for me, those kind of simple things for the high school kids. Army was our A concept because that's what the kids liked. Boise was I was in Boise at the time when we came up with this system, so Boise was our B concept, and that's just a base snag concept, but we would tag 1, 2, 3 with our ABC concepts, and that became a way for us to manipulate and change the base concept in a very easy way to our kids just by tagging what receiver had what responsibility. And that's kind of where that came from, and we've just, you know, never really got away from Army as the base tag, even though some of the other things have changed over time.
I was just wondering if that was another thematic thing, like, you know, the NBA play.
Yeah, it was originally, but now it's just kind of, the Navy's gone. We've actually changed the outside and counter to NFL teams, but Army has stuck with the inside zone. I don't know that that will ever change.
So, Coach, as you're practicing these things, you know, how do you, first of all, let's take a look at game planning. How do you approach each week game planning as to how you're going to use your base play? Are you going out there and using it just in that same formation every week and saying, hey, stop it, and then we'll adjust to it? Or do you look for some advantages in personnel and formation?
The nice thing about Army, we're basically a base four formation team. We're not a heavy multiple formation team. We run our 2x2 double set, and it's the same every week. Our guys don't flip for speed. Our H and X are always on the left. Our Y and Z are always on the right. When we move to 3x1 formations, our H or Y has to move that one guy to make trips, but the X and Z is either in the trips or in the single, depending on if it's right or left. We run a base empty set and a base two-back set. And so basically out of those four formations, we can get to different Armies very, very easily. But the thing that's really helped us with game planning is and I didn't do this at the high school level because we had to play a lot of kids multiple ways, and so your structure was a little different, but we've really taken the days of the week. So Tuesday is our opener's day, and it's all of our plays that we're going to run on first and second down, game planned and in heavy into that script on Tuesday. You know, Wednesday is our red zone day, heavy emphasis there, and then Thursday is our third down day. And so there's some natural carryover from some of the Armies that you're going to run regardless of those situations, but you're going to get then three good solid practice days with those heavy rep plays. Whereas something that might only be a small use on a third and short isn't going to be heavily emphasized early in the week on openers or red zone, and I don't think it needs to be taking up all those reps when it, you know, is a play that might get called once, twice a game, whereas Army's getting called. So that structure of the week has really helped us to rep the plays that we most want to rep for that particular opponent and get, you know, I don't think a play should be really run on Saturday unless you've been able to rep it out a good amount of time, 20 to 25 times over the course of the week. is kind of the goal for us with our base concepts.
Coach, you've done very well in situational football. On third down this year, you were 51%, which put you at number 6 in the country in third down percentage. Looking back on the season, what's a critical situation you faced, whether it was third down or something in the red zone, or even maybe with something coming out of your own end zone, but a critical situation you faced and how you approached that from a strategic standpoint?
I think one of the important things for us is that we're not too bound by, like, you know, we have to run this play in certain situations, so it gives us quite a bit of unpredictability. We're a 4 verticals team, and kind of maybe to back up a little bit, you know, our offense is really predicated on doing 3 things well. We want to run between the tackles well. We want to stretch the defense horizontally with the perimeter game, and we want to take shots down the field vertically. And we feel like if we can do all 3 of those things, it makes us really tough to defend from a defense standpoint. But being willing to call 4 verticals on 3rd and short, because we have the confidence to either go for it on 4th down, or has really been effective to us. We had some key games that turned because we're in a short yard situation and we're not playing to a common tendency. We're willing to throw the ball down the field and create big explosive plays when the defense is maybe expecting something more to the sticks. Those were some big turnarounds for us, especially in the PLU game. We were down 17 in the 4th quarter and was able to win that game. And big part of that turning point was we threw a vertical on 3rd and 2 that went for like 60-yard touchdown.
Now, when you're looking at 3rd down like that and the approach that obviously you have a down where you could take a shot. Now, is that something your coach is going to give you on a certain area of the field that you got 4 downs, or is it when you get to 3rd and short, he'll let you know, you know, what he's thinking right there?
Yeah, our head coach is usually giving me the defensive coordinator and our quarterback's coach are right next to each other in the box, and he's usually giving us, hey, you got 2 on 3rd down, so we're freed up with that. But, you know, I think our kids have become, we've been pretty good on 4th down the 3 years we've been here, and they've been pretty good at getting used to kind of when we're going to get that range of the field where situationally we don't mind maybe even on a 3rd and 7 throwing the ball 3 or 4 yards, knowing that either A, our guy is going to make a guy miss and get some yards after catch, or we're going to be able to go for it on 4th down. Teaching our kids those different situations has allowed us to just not look at 3rd down with a lot of pressure, I guess, and then be freed up to just keep playing. I think another thing that helps us is we have what we call nitro concepts, and nitro is just a 1-word concept. We have like nitro, echo, where everybody knows that this is the play. They just have to hear that word. And we've used those a lot on 3rd and shorts just to push tempo, get defenses in a base call, get defenses trying to align and not set. Those were really effective for us on 3rd down, just being able to trust in those 1-word tempo concepts where we're going pretty fast normally anyways, but these are super fast concepts that just allow us to get up there and go.
As you get into the red zone, do you use any of those as well? Is that a good area for using those 1-word concepts?
Yeah, I think our tailback set a school record with 21 rushing touchdowns, and quite a few of those were big explosive pass plays into the red zone where then you follow that up with a nitro concept for us. And, you know, it not all nitro is an army concept for us where, again, we've got a pre-snap bubble to number 2 to the field, and a boundary net, what we call a now screen to number 1, and the tailbacks on that same side running to the field with our inside zone. But we've been able to get a lot of just pre-snap bubble shots off of those with defenses not getting leveraged out to the field, or we've got a lot of just tempo run, quarterback read, the boundary screen off of those as well. And those have been good transitions when you get into the red zone, especially kind of off that big previous play. And then you maybe the defense is trying to sub or they're trying to get down there in line, and we know we're getting a nitro call.
Now, do you carry the same nitro call or, you know, echo call throughout the season, or those vary from week to week?
The attachments vary, but we don't like changing things for the old line all that much. So, like, nitro might always be inside zone to the left, and echo is always inside zone to the right or outside zone to the right. So for the linemen, we're trying to make as little changes week to week as possible for those base calls, but the perimeter attachments might change.
Coach, we're going to shift gears here and go into a segment of the show we call Lessons in Learning and focus on some of the things that you've had through your experiences, some of the things that you've learned. So we'll go all the way back to the beginning for you. What's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what did you learn from it?
One of the biggest ones I learned was not getting overconfident with your preparation. My very first year, we lost the state title game after winning 9 games in a row to get there. Just kind of got a little overconfident with what we were doing and maybe didn't take as much study or as much preparation into what happens if they stop our base concepts, what next, and kind of got caught in the midst of a game. And you never want to be in that situation where you're grasping for something to run or not confident in being able to execute something. So that very first year took that lesson and have always over-prepared, if anything, to avoid that mistake.
What's the best advice you've received in your coaching career?
I think just to not be afraid to tell my players I love them, you know, to show that love daily through your actions. Had some kids go through some tough situations like any coach has in a career, and being able to be there for a kid, to pray for a kid that's lost a loved one or a good friend, those are tough situations. We had a player last year, an all-league receiver as a freshman, go through cancer, diagnosed with cancer right before fall camp of his sophomore year, and be able to embrace him and the family, even though he wasn't playing, and then to bring him back this year, but in a different role than he was as a freshman, playing all the time, to somebody that was not getting to play all the time. Those are tough situations, but to know that kid's loved and to have him part of the family, those have been the biggest piece of advice to me early, was to just not be afraid to love your kids.
What advice would you have to a young coach looking to make it long-term in this profession?
You know, to be genuine, to be present where they are. I've, you know, bounced around a little bit in my career because of some of my, you know, wife going to school in New Jersey and then us starting to have kids in Boise and wanting to get close to family. And sometimes you start to kind of look at that next thing too soon or kind of forgetting that you're somewhere that you need to be present there. And so being present and being genuine and being in the moment, those next things will come when they're supposed to come. I think that would be good. And then again, just that mantra of never being afraid to learn. Don't be embarrassed to show you don't know something and have that keep you from learning some new way of doing something. I think there's always ways as coaches we can tweak and learn to coach something better, and being open to that is huge.
What's a book you've learned from that you would recommend to our listeners?
I was a history teacher, so I saw that question on here, and the best book I've read probably in the last 5 years is called Boys in the Boat, and it's really not anything to do about football. It's actually about crew, which I knew nothing about, but what a lesson in perseverance and what a lesson in teamwork. There's application there to culture and how you build your programs and have relationships valued in your program, so that one would be huge. I think a more practical one that I've used in how we do things is the R4 was the football book that I would say has been most thoughtful. We don't completely use it full sail the way they do in the book, but it certainly changed the way we think about progressions and how we teach our quarterbacks and receivers coverage indicators. Those have been key things that we've embraced from that book and implemented in our own system.
Yeah, Dub did a great job with that. We had him on the show last week. We aired that episode, and he shared some of his ideas there. He's obviously a guy who really has thought that out in a detailed process, and I know it's been helpful to a lot of coaches. It's something that I certainly learned from as well. Coach, what's something you've taken from a clinic and implemented into what you do?
When I was in New Jersey, I went to a Glazier clinic and heard a coach out of Texas that ran a lot of empty sets, and we like to do some empty sets. It was a bigger part of our identity this past year because we have a lot of deep receivers, able to get more receivers on the field. But his shallow cross tags out of empty was something that we implemented. So we call our empty set 50, and then you just label the receivers from left to right in our empty 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so that allows us, by basically tagging one receiver, so like 55, means the number five receiver is the shallow cross. Well, then that becomes a doubles formation for us, and we just use our normal 2x2 tags. So we can say something like 55 Oregon, and the 55 guy knows he's a shallow cross, and the rest of the guys know we have our Oregon concept. And so it's been an easy, streamlined way for us to not add a lot of words, but a whole new dimension when we get in our empty sets using that shallow cross tag.
Coach, what's something you're excited to learn more about as we head into this offseason, whether it's a specific on-field technique or play or even a defense that you faced?
One thing that we're really looking at, we have an athletic quarterback. Obviously, he's very good as a junior, led the nation passing. But one thing we haven't done with him a lot is getting him out on the edge with some play-action stuff off of our Army. So we're looking at some stuff that teams do really not as much in a sprint-out protection, but more of a play-action protection off of what we do with the inside zone and how to do that and how to streamline the calls to allow us to do that. That's something we're excited about adding to our offense for this spring and then hopefully incorporating next fall.
Technology has become such a big part of our learning and our coaching. What's your favorite piece of coaching technology or something new you would really like to incorporate into your workflow?
Well, to be honest, with our budget, I haven't been able to take advantage of some of the nicer things that are out there. I've seen some of them, and we're kind of looking into potentially purchasing a couple things. But, I mean, the biggest thing right now is just the huddle playbooks, the presentations. We've replaced paper playbooks. Our guys don't use them. They've just got lost in the past. I would say that's the number one thing we utilize, but I guess I'm excited to free up some resources and get more into some of those 3D things that they have out there. I haven't had a chance to fully implement those with our guys yet.
Well, Coach, you could get into Go Army Edge. It's priced right at free.
Go Army Edge?
GoArmyEdge.com, yeah. It gives you the 3D simulations. It also has a virtual reality component to it where you could put the players' phone in like a Google Cardboard, which is very cheap, like $10, and they'll be right there in the play. So they turn left, turn right, they can look around the field and see what's there and process, you know, and make their decisions based on that.
Cool. Appreciate the recommendation.
Coach, how do you create balance? You know, we're passionate about this game as coaches. We put a lot of time into it. There's a lot of things required of it. So how do you create balance with your family, your faith, your health, all the things that have to be important outside of football?
Well, big thing is working for a head coach that understands family is first. You know, he's got two sons. I've got four kids, 8, 6, 4, and just about 2. So one of the things he let me do is we got 4 days in Hawaii as a family before I had 8 days there to work. So getting those kids out there and our, got our grandparents out there, had 4 days of fun before basically they flew home and I did the work of recruiting. So finding ways to incorporate the family into natural things. I've taken each of my kids on a road trip. They love it. They ride the bus to one of our league opponent games. And then I have, my parents are in Oregon, so we make sure it's when we're playing one of the Oregon teams, they go spend the night with grandparents and get to see cousins and then come to the game the next day and ride home with us. You know, our first staff meeting of the day is at 9:30, so that allows me to be present with the kids, getting ready for school, have breakfast with them every day, and even in the long nights of the season when I might be not seeing them before they go to bed, starting that day off with them every day is really meaningful and important. A head coach that fosters those things, that understands those things, is huge. You know, as far as the health side of things, you know, you got to, just like you would build in time to eat meals, you got to build in time to do a workout. And luckily I got a yellow lab that's full of energy, and so she almost forces me, in order to have my wife have a good day, to take her on a morning run just to get that energy out of her. So those are kind of things that have worked for me, just implementing and putting in the time to make sure those things are happening. I guess that would be my biggest compliment to our head coach, is that he fosters those relationships and allows those things not to get lost in the busyness of being a coach.
Coach, what major concerns do you have for the future of our game right now? What ideas do you have that address those concerns?
That was one I thought about a little bit, and I think for me, just being on the other side of it as a high school coach for a long time, the individuality that is growing out of the whole recruiting process and the way it gets done through social media and a lot of attention gets. I mean, we had two Division I quarterbacks that, you know, they attract a lot of attention, and rightfully so, because they're going to be special players at the next level. But it's hard to not have that at some point be all about them and the big announcements that come and all the attention that they get, you know, the media that always wants to interview them after a game, never the O-lineman or never the guy on the other side of the ball that maybe was just as important as getting that win. So remembering that it's the greatest team sport that's ever invented, and somehow trying to, as a coach, always bring the rightful attention to the positions that maybe don't naturally get so much individual attention or the individual accolades is important for me to always be paying attention to. I mean, even this year with Ian getting all the awards and records that he broke, that doesn't happen without the team around him. And so finding ways to make sure it's always about the team and not about the individual. You know, obviously the flip side of that is one of my duties here at Whitworth is I'm the equipment guy, and the concussion thing from a player safety standpoint is huge. And I think we got to be willing to, you know, we have a local company out of Seattle, Visis, that develops new helmets and then didn't end up getting used this fall, but just having things that are going to continually be on the cutting edge, be developed and be allowed for our players to be used moving forward is going to be huge for us to protect our game.
Coach, we're going to pick up the pace a little bit and go into our two-minute drill here. So just some quick question and answers on some various football topics. So let's start with this. Schematically, what's the toughest defense to face?
For us, it's always been the team that can get to us with four and put seven into coverage. That's, you know, that 4-2-5 look for us in our league. When they have a front four that's able to get to you minus one in numbers and then still play seven in coverage, that's been hard for us to consistently, you know, have success against if you're not getting the run game going. And Linfield is the top dog in our league, and that's what they've been able to do to us the last 2 years is keep us from getting our run game going with only really their front four rushing the passer when we do throw it.
What's your favorite goal line play?
It's called Tear Omaha. We get double slant to the field, a vertical back pylon speed out to the boundary with tailback motion to the double slant side. Quarterback has pre-snap to the speed out side and post-snap to the motion side. It was our number one red zone play this last year.
Turf or grass?
Oh, we're on grass. Love it. Probably getting a new turf field next fall.
The end of grass for you. Favorite backfield set?
Favorite backfield, we're one back almost all the time.
Day game or night game?
Love Friday Night Lights. As a high school coach, there's nothing better than Friday Night Lights. I miss that the most, to being a college coach.
If you had to run your offense from one formation, what would it be?
2x2 doubles.
What's your favorite quote?
You know, our head coach is a huge quote guy, and so we get him all the time. I like the one you have on your web. I'm a big Teddy Roosevelt fan as a history guy. The one about the man in the competition, the man in the ring is a good one.
Should the kickoff be eliminated?
No.
If you could pick one football coach from the past to learn from, either retired or no longer with us, who would it be?
Don Shula. I grew up a Marino fan. Would love to look at what they were doing when they were doing it. First team to really throw it around in my generation when I was a kid.
How about one from the present?
He's right down the road. I like what Leach does in the air raid. We have quite a few air raid concepts.
How many teams should be included in the FBS playoff?
8 would be exciting.
All things equal, run it or throw it?
Let's throw it.
Nice job on the two-minute drill there, Coach. Here's the final question. And you're a guy who's brought a high school team to the pinnacle and won a state championship. As an offensive coordinator now at the college level, you have one of the top offenses in the country. What would you point to as the one thing that gives your teams the winning edge?
The players' confidence in themselves. It's the job of the coach for us to prepare them. We don't get to go out there ourselves. Just the confidence they have in each other and in themselves is the number one thing that I think we do as coaches to ensure success on game day, regardless of X and O's.
Coach Stanfield, how can our listeners connect with you?
My email and cell is on my phone, and I'm starting to get involved in the Twitter universe. I have a handle at Coach Stanfield 5, but not on there as much as I probably should be.
All right, Coach. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. continued success and good luck to you in the future. And I look forward to seeing what you guys do this next year.
Thank you. Have a great Christmas time and blessings on you and your family.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.